Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey everyone, another Baseball America Playoff Podcast. JJ and Kyle here today to talk over Game 7, talk over those world champion Houston Astros. But before we do that, we do want to thank you for tuning in to today's Baseball America Podcast. Our podcast is sponsored by Bowman. Bowman is the official sponsor of our 30 Days of Giveaways contest this November. Each weekday, we are giving away tremendous prizes from your favorite baseball brands. If you go to baseballamerica.com right now, you'll see the 30 Days giveaway. Click on it. Great giveaway today. There is, you can choose, if you win, for free, you will win an Easton Ghost or Beast bat, both two awesome bats. You can choose which one you want if you win. But there's going to be great prizes coming up every weekday throughout the entire month. It's kind of a pretty awesome, I wish I could win some of these because they really are cool prizes. But right now, the ones who are bringing home the ultimate hardware are the Houston Astros. They wrapped it up last night, 5-1 win. Game that was probably, I wouldn't say, it was still compelling because the Dodgers had base runners seemingly at all times and seemingly never were able to get any of them in, but it was something where that game, I'll give you credit, Kyle, you predicted what could happen, and I said adamantly on this podcast yesterday, I said, they're not going to let you, Darvish, be in there long enough to blow the game, and I was wrong. Now, I will say, I was right. They should have never let you, Darvish, be in there long enough to blow the game, but they did. I don't know why he faced George Springer the second time, but so he did.
And that was obviously, to me, I think the biggest mistake, because at that point, we've seen George Springer already hit the ball hard off of him. We've seen you, Darvish, struggle through the first inning. And if you go back and listen to the podcast, one of the things we talked about was, look, if he was going well, sure, leave him in. But at the first sign of trouble, you needed to yank him, and the Dodgers didn't do that. I do think it was interesting watching just, you know, the game, but also social media reaction. Everyone was all about, see, they should have started Clayton Kershaw. Darvish shouldn't have started, which I thought was ludicrous on a couple of levels. But really, the Dodgers lost for a lot of reasons beyond just that. And I mean, you mentioned having a lot of runners on base and not doing anything with them. First inning, bases loaded, got nothing. Second inning, two on, one out, got nothing. Third inning, two on, no out, got nothing. Fifth inning, two on, one out, got nothing. Sixth inning, two on, no out. They've got one.
They got one.
But, I mean, you consistently...
And that was it.
That was it. You consistently leave runners on base over and over and over and over.
Lance McCullers hit four batters and did not give up any runs.
It's something where... So, if you're the Dodgers, obviously, look. Yu Darvish pitching him into a hole does not help. At the same time, there were opportunities to get back in the game, make it a little closer, make it more competitive. And they just didn't come through. I mean, you look at this World Series and you can say, okay, you know, where, you know, the Dodgers, after 104 wins, people, I think, are going to look at a lot of the pitching decisions that were made Game 2 and into Game 7, and that's fair. But at the end of the day, it does come down to the players. They're the ones that have to play. They're the ones that have to make the pitches and come out and make the big hits. And in a lot of cases, the Dodgers didn't do that. I mean, they conclude this World Series. Justin Turner hit 160. Cody Bellinger hit 143. Yasiel Puig hit 148. Corey Seager and Chris Taylor both hit 222. I mean, you go back and look, the Astros, aside from George Springer, weren't exactly tearing the cover off the ball either. But at least they're, like, for the most part, consistently in the 200s. They don't have their 3, 4, 5 hitters sub-200. And I think for any team, when your big guns in the middle of your order aren't hitting, and frankly, outside of Jock Peterson, not many other people are hitting, period.
Chris Taylor and Jock Peterson.
Right, and Chris Taylor had some big moments, but still, 222 over the course of the series.
Well, it's his dub, but 220, you're giving batting average, which, what is his on-base, what is his slugging?
They're going to have to make me look that up even a little further. But I think overall...
Because I was going to say, I bet you if you look at his on-base and slugging, I don't care he hit 222. His on-base, he got on-base, and he drove from the ball for power.
That's fair. Looks like 2017, the total postseason... OPS, everything was a little bit higher. We'll pull up the World Series. Well, but the overall point stands, you know, even in the context of last night's game, for them to have that many runners on base, I mean, 1 for 13 with runners in scoring position, 10
you're
runners
gonna lose.
Left on
generally,
base.
Generally, you will lose if that's your stats.
So on that end, but even, you know, getting off of, okay, this is what the Dodgers did wrong, how about what the Astros did right? I mean, I think the biggest thing for me, obviously, George Springer showing the greater world, who's been one of the better young players in baseball for years, really showing the world, hey, I'm a star, don't doubt me. Charlie Morton, for him to come out again, 4 great innings out of the bullpen to finish that. I mean, for the Astros to go out and have a bullpen game, and we talked about, oh, we might see Keuchel, we might see Verlander. They didn't need him. Charlie Morton just shut it down. And that's, you know, this is a guy who I talked about at the beginning of the postseason, had a really good year. I had some skepticism on how he'd be, you know, in these big postseason moments. And he wasn't great to start. And then, you know, his ALDS performance was not good. His first ALCS performance wasn't good. Game 7 has a great, great showing. And then 2 really good World Series showings. To me, Charlie Morton is a guy who I think really, I'd say, upped his profile just as, hey, this is what he's capable of doing on this grand stage. And that was, I think, one of the more interesting secondary stories of the World Series.
One thing, Chris Taylor, 222, 344, 407. So, yeah. I'll take that. You're
no
facing
question.
Some of the best pitchers, you know, out
right.
there.
Again, it's more on that middle ground of the
Cody
Turner,
Bellinger, 143, 172, 393. Yeah, you got to have better than that. Justin Turner, 160, 323, 360. Even that, you got to have better than that. Couple things. Like, the Clayton Kershaw should have started. The thing about it is if I'd have seen a massive, a lot of comments about that yesterday leading into the game, it'd be one
right.
thing.
It was a very 2020 hindsight.
Clayton Kershaw's pitching really well. Why didn't he start? Which is a very different thing than why isn't Clayton Kershaw starting this game? The thing about it is as much as I was baffled by the fact that Yu Darvish was allowed to continue pitching in the second inning, but if I reverse engineer it back, considering the Dodgers' inability to get anyone in who got on base, well, not anyone, all but one, get one in.
Andre Ethier, World Series Game 7 hero for the Dodgers.
But because of that, the game was lost before anything, by any logic where you would say, like, again, I was the mister, you get Yu Darvish up to start the game and you've got a guy warming up in the pen. That being said, okay, leadoff double, hard hit ball. Next ball is a ball hit that Cody Bellinger, who I love as a defensive first baseman, Cody Bellinger's range got him in trouble there because I don't know. It was suboptimal for him to make that play. He was spinning. The ball was hit basically just to the left of the second baseman. I mean, you know, but so he makes an error and boom.
Two batters in. They're down 2-0. Or
no,
three batters in.
Three batters in, down 2. Then the next batter comes up. And it's, again, ground ball to the right side, but Bregman stole third, so he scores on it. It's 2-0, and at that point, Yu Darvish has allowed one hard hit ball. There's no scenario, even me, who was like Mr. Pull Darvish, there's no scenario where you'd have said, you have to have Yu out of that game by that point.
Well,
and at that point, it's 2-0. They never got 2 runs.
And especially, you know, the way he finished it, Carlos Correa, soft grounder, Yasiel Puig, fly out, or Yuli Gurriel, excuse me. I mean, but once you start getting into that second inning, and when you say, okay, first of all, the umpire missing strike 3 on McCann on a 1-2 count to lead off the inning, really, really, really reverse course.
But all this is moot because this was runs 3, 4, 5,
right,
and the Dodgers didn't get run 2.
And you're right. And that's where, again, I think you do have to look at the Dodgers coming back. And, you know, it does just come down to these players on the field have to make the plays. I think it's kind of interesting. We have a lot of the armchair managers who analyze managers' every move, but the players got to perform. And in this case, the Dodgers did not, and that's just it happens. Bad timing,
but as I said, they took it to 7 games, so it's not
right.
Like,
oh, I'm talking in the context of 7 of game 7,
but
they didn't perform.
But we did also want to talk about. You talked about Charlie Morton. The thing that stands out to me about this is you look at it and. When you asked me about this Astros team and how they did this, the thing that stands out to me, we've talked a little bit on the podcast, I think, before about this, but the thing that stands out to me more than anything for this, for the Astros, is the Astros as an organization under the Jeff Luhnow era have had a confidence in what they're doing. Some would call it even an arrogance in what they're doing. But you know what? It's not arrogance if it works, and it worked. But a confidence in what they're doing. And they simply did not. They were more so than almost any organization I can think of. They did not care how those moves were perceived at the time. And I don't want to, I mean, maybe I'm making too big a deal out of this, but the reality of it is that that's very hard to do. Teams are, it's hard for teams to completely make every move or most moves where they're not worried about the perception of that move. And you look at the Astros, and you can, if you want to argue that the Astros tanking, and they tanked, and they tanked hard, if you want to argue that's bad for the game overall, you can make that argument. Now, I'll say this, that I made this argument at the time when John and I would talk on the podcast, and I'd say, those fans, those Astro fans, when they win, they'll be back. They don't care. Yes, you absolutely have no one coming to the games right now.
I think where it
you
has
haven't
an effect,
lost a generation of fans.
I think where it has an effect is on the owner's bottom line when it's three straight years of less fans showing up means less money coming into the team. So I think but again, so it takes a little bit of a patience on ownership's part too,
right,
to say, hey, 3 years, we're having massively declining ticket sales,
but,
merchandise sales.
But
we
the
have
reality
to make
of it
sure
is
there's
that,
a financial payoff.
But the reality of it is that even on a financial side, it's not a massive one because those teams were going to be terrible no matter what they did. The only way you could have made those slightly better would have been to pay for a free agent.
Right, but if you're drawing, you know, not that they were drawing crazy, but if you're drawing $1.9 million and you're then drawing, I think, what was it, $3 million over 2 years combined, that's less gate revenue you're getting. So, but again, it was worth it. I agree.
Considering the Astros were already losing some money.
It makes sense where it's like, okay, ship out the veteran contracts, go cheap. So in some ways, you're able to mitigate some of that gate loss a little bit. But I do think this was a long-term vision. And I give credit to Jim Crane on the ownership side. I give credit to everyone in the front office, scouting stuff all the way down. As, you know, Luno talked about, as much as you have the plan, it's not easy watching your team get blown out every day. I mean, they were a joke on Jeopardy. I mean, this was a team that was a punchline, and that does wear on you. It does wear on everyone in your organization.
But,
and I do think it's a testament to them that they had the fortitude to hold steady, hold through, and, you know, not panic and say, or not have anyone on the ownership side come down and say, hey, this tanking's gone long enough. We need to see results now, as opposed to still being patient enough to let it build.
And I don't mean this as basically job security for every GM to the end of time, but we've now had, in 2015, the Royals won, and the Royals were a laughingstock, and there was a lot of questions of, how does Dayton Moore in this front office get this long? And the reality of it is that patience paid off. The Astros, it was less patience, because the reality is that, you know, when Luhnow came in, he basically told him it's going to be rough, and it was rough. But the reality is that 2015 season when they get to the playoffs very much took the pressure off from the standpoint of,
yes,
like, the arrival.
That was huge.
The arrival of a competitive team happened maybe a year early. But the other thing about it is that in the midst of that, you look at they whiffed on Appel. You know, that's a...
Well, two of their three number one overall picks didn't work because Aiken...
But when you say that, though, the Brady Aiken
into,
worked.
They turned
Brady
into...
Aiken is a team... It is absolutely true that you are going to get a lot of scorn by not signing the number one pick. But hold on. But, yes, you get scorned for that. But that's also... That's what's difficult to do. They didn't
in any way... They did the right thing. When I say it didn't work...
No, I'm not talking to you. I'm saying to the podcast. They did the right thing because the reality is, you look at it, they were right on Brady Aiken.
Oh, there's no argument
against
that.
Brady Aiken right now is not one of the top 300 prospects in the game.
Well, I mean, they said his UCL is going to blow, and guess what? His UCL blew.
And it has not come back in the way. Like, the reality is right now Brady Aiken is, you know, whereas, and by doing that, then that meant, I mean, you want to talk about the seeds of the World Series title, Alex Bregman, right. But it goes beyond that. That also gave them the money, in part, by having two first-round picks like that. That, as the Astros like to do, they spread it around. Daz Cameron was one of the pieces that got them Justin Verlander. So, again, you look at these moves, and the thing about it is tweeted us out this morning, and I know you're, you know, this strikes you too. Justin Verlander acquiring Justin Verlander in many ways is the difference. When you win in Game 7 of the World Series, having a guy like Verlander, you know, was a key factor in you winning a World
Series.
But the Justin Verlander also makes them more likely to come back next year.
You know,
great trade.
Yeah, not especially when you consider that Justin Verlander wasn't a 3-month rental. I do think that the Astros, you know, this was what they've been building towards. I will say, on the one hand, there's no question over this team and say, yeah, they could absolutely be back, should absolutely be back. But we also know baseball's a fickle game.
They have the opportunity to be back because they will be one of the best teams in baseball next year. That does not mean they will be back. Chicago Cubs were one of the best teams in baseball this year. They didn't make it back.
And again, I do think just focusing on, you know, the right now, I think you look at the Astros, they did a really good job. You know, you look at the roster construction, I think it was only 6 of the guys on their 25-man World Series roster were technically homegrown. A lot of the prospect depth they dealt from. And look, the Astros were a top 10 farm system 4 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that prospect depth, they hit on some of the big ones. They nabbed their 5 or 6 big stars, or, well, 4 or 5 of them, really. And then they were able to trade the rest for other guys who were veterans who helped them win this. And it goes back to that. It's not always about drafting prospects and saying all, you know, we're going to use 15 or 16 prospects. It's find your 5 or 6 best. And if you need to use the rest for trades, go right ahead. And I think the Astros pro scouting department deserves a ton of credit for their ability to go out and make some of those deals and use that prospect that's properly identifying, hey, we need to make sure we hold on to Carlos Correa. We need to make sure we hold on to George Springer. We need to make sure we hold on to Alex Bregman. Not that they were the hardest decisions in the world.
Well, also the front office, hey, we're going to sign Jose Altuve to a massive, at the time, a large extension.
And then
you look at it and say, he's going to make $12.5 million over the next 2 years.
And you look and say, okay, we like Rio Ruiz, we like Mike Fultonevich, we like these guys, but we do think we can get more from the veteran that we can trade them for. And I think that, and that's not always, you know, there's a lot of teams out there who had the top prospect who, you know, in some cases was a top 10, top 20 pick, and they say, all right, we move them, and it just is not a good process of decision making. And I think you give the Astros, to me, their pro scouting department, a ton of credit for properly identifying the guys to keep, properly identifying the guys who were movable, and making sure when they did move them, they move them for quality players. Because we see a lot of times prospect for veteran trades. Sometimes there are some teams out there that seemingly just trade a prospect for a veteran without any consideration of who that veteran prospect actually are.
The other things I would say with that, though, also is that you look at it and you say, I also think that the Astros farm system, their player development side, has done an excellent job. I think that the Astros hitting development is as good as any out there. Jeff Albert and everyone on the minor league side. I think that you look at it, you know, they have had consistent winners. They've had, you know, you look at the, I know Tony DeFrancesco is no longer there, but they had a winner at Fresno. Rodney Linares, Omar Lopez,
all these guys. Lancaster teams when I was out in the Cal League from 2011. The 2011 team wasn't any good, but you saw Jose Altuve. You're like, this dude's really freaking good. But once you start getting that 2012, 2013, 2014 group, you just saw the talent come up over and over and over. And a lot of these guys who are on this World Series team, it's funny, all the old Cal League broadcasters talked a little bit about it, like, hey, we've seen this before, you know, and it was a lot of the same guys. It was McCullers, it was Correa. When I saw George Springer a lot in 2012, you know, to me, he was the best player in the California League that year, period. I mean, everyone was so excited about Billy Hamilton.
He was the California Carolina League All-Star MVP.
And when you watched him on the field that year, all the things he could do, there was no one better, and that was present, and you could say, and he's going to get better.
The thing about it is that.
So,
but the thing with
you,
that
you
about
saw, you saw the talent coming up, and it, that results in winners at each level. And you mentioned they built it.
But the other thing that stands out to me with Springer, again, this is the development that they've had. George Springer,
a lot more swing and miss, and now it's.
I remember
down.
Having many a conversation. Yeah. I remember talking to a scout. I was on my way to a game in Greensboro, and we talked about George Springer for probably 20 minutes. And he said, "You know, he could be one of the best players of the game." And the thing I really like about him is that. At the worst, he's going to be a very useful player because even if he never improves his swing, you know, the swing and miss, the power, the speed, the defense, all those things will play. And even if it's a well below average hit tool. At that time, the year you're talking about, he struck out 26% of the time in high A. He goes up to double A the next year and strikes out 29.7% of the time in double A. So 30% strikeout rate. This year in the big leagues, he struck out 17.6% of the time. Again, that's credit to him, but that is also credit. He cut his strikeout rate this year by 6% in the big leagues from last year to this year. I know there's improvement, but the reality of it is there is a plan that gets you to that. The Astros have gotten to where, partly by players they've acquired, but even players they have who struck out a lot don't strike out as much as they used to.
Look, they led the majors in pretty much every single offensive category while also having the fewest strikeouts.
Which is amazing, because this same Astros team, just a couple of years ago, you're like, they hit a lot of homers, but man, they struck out.
And that was something, it's funny, I did this study at my old job in 2015, and I would like to go and re-update it now with these two additional seasons and I think what I found was interesting was there's always this debate about, is a strikeout really worse than any other out? And what I found was there's a certain threshold of strikeouts. And at the time, it was 1,399 strikeouts for a team per year. It comes out to roughly 8 per game. Once you cross that threshold, it was very, very clear that your offense, even if you had good players, was going to be a bottom half of the major league's offense. Mm-hmm. And that included, by the way, the 2015 Cubs at the time, who made an NLCS, but if you looked at it, they were in the bottom half of runs scored in a lot of offensive categories in the majors. They got there because their pitching staff was second in ERA that year. They were the only ones to have a winning record. Once you got past that certain threshold of strikeouts, it was a direct correlation that, hey, your offense, at a certain point, when you're swinging and missing that much, you're not going to be able to put up the runs you need to win games. I think now, again, I want to go readjust because we've seen a little upping of the strikeout rate in those seasons. But I think to the Astros' credit, they realized, it always kind of befuddled me a little bit how some of the people are saying, it's okay, the strikeout. At a certain point, you do need to put the balls in play. Even the best teams in the majors are making 80 to 100 errors a year. It's 80 to 100 extra base runners. Give the Astros a lot of credit for forcing the issue, making sure that they find the guys that could put the ball in play while also not being slap hitters. There's a lot of power in this lineup. And to me, that's a development of finding, and again, goes back to pro scouting.
That's not to say that every decision the Astros, I know there's some people listening, it's like, well, what about J.D. Martinez? What about Jonathan?
It doesn't mean that they've done everything right.
But at the same time, they've done a lot right, and that's why that they're sitting where they are here. And the thing that also does stand out about this to kind of is the Astros and the Dodgers are both teams. You look at this Dodgers team, and it is very possible that the best is still yet to come for this Dodgers team. I mean, I know they went to Game 7 of the World Series, but the reality of it is that you look at this team and you say, okay, we're going to still see a very, very strong farm system. I mean, it's a top-loaded as far as the Walker Buehlers and they've got talent coming up. Mitchell White, they've got still a lot of talent in that
Verdugo,
system.
Verdugo, Ruiz, Yusnel Diaz.
I love Ruiz.
Yusnel Diaz is a heck of a player. I think not enough people are paying attention to.
But so they've got talent. But beyond that, they have Cody Bellinger had a great rookie year. He had a terrible World Series, but he had a great rookie year. Corey Seager is still coming into the prime of his career.
Bellinger's 22. Seager's 23.
Right. So we're going to be seeing those guys for a long time. And then, the thing that stands out to me is even if Chris Taylor, this was the greatest year that Chris Taylor's ever going to have, and maybe it's not. Maybe he is like Justin Turner, taking it to a new level, and then that level is his new level. But even if we see some degradation from Justin Turner, who is now coming into, he's hit the peak and now probably should be in the decline phase of his career, modest decline. Even if Chris Taylor can't live up to that again, this team has the horses that you say these guys can be better to go with. And then again, you look at the pitching staff, and I think this pitching staff has the depth to be good for several years to come.
There's no question. I mean, go back even beyond those two. Yasiel Puig, he's 26. Jock Peterson, who I think really reestablished in the World Series, hey, I am a guy you should consider moving forward, he's 25. Austin Barnes, who we saw essentially take over the starting catcher role, he's 27. Chris Taylor's 27. I mean, this is a group of guys who are still in that 22 to 27 range that have a lot of good performances ahead of them. And, again, Justin Turner will be 33 next year. No one should doubt Justin Turner's ability to come out and still be a really good player.
We have seen the best of Justin. He's 33. Players at 33 almost about fail are worse than they were at 32.
But even if we've seen the best of him, even if he comes down a little bit, he just goes from being one of the...
What I'm saying is that you need guys to be stepping up a little more because it is unrealistic to think that 33-year-old Justin Turner is going to keep getting better. He's in, and it should be modest decline. But the thing about it is if he declines modestly and Cody Bellinger takes two steps forward because he'll be 23, that more than cancels each other out.
And he's still going to be a good player. I don't think we're going to see Justin Turner crater. Alex Wood, by the way, had a great year. He's 26. He's been around for a little bit because he got through the minors really, really quick. But he's still a young guy. Kershaw does have an opt-out coming in his contract. Not this offseason, but following it. And, you know, he's still 29. Been around for a while. Obviously, he's had some back issues. But I don't think anyone in their right mind would doubt Clayton Kershaw's ability to go out and be an elite pitcher. The Dodgers are in good shape. Again, we talk about the Astros being a well-built organization that's made a lot of smart moves.
We talk about the core being young. Altuve, Springer,
Correa, Bregman,
right there. I mean, and those are all, for the next 2 years, all of them, essentially. Springer is not fully cost-controlled, I don't believe. I think he actually will be in arbitration. I don't think, they're going to be able to afford to keep their core four together. And then around that core four, like, we saw Derek Fisher as a pinch runner in this series. You know, that was essentially his role. Would not surprise me at all if Derek Fisher moves into a larger role going forward. Their farm system... I know everyone talks about the bullpen's the thing that they're going to have to fix. The bullpen's the thing they're going to have to fix. The thing I'm kind of be interested to see is we saw it this year with Joe Musgrove in the second half of the season, that Joe Musgrove became a useful piece in that bullpen. Can he be that? Is that maybe the role that Francis Martez, you know, ends up basically working into? If David Paulino can ever be healthy for, you know, and non-suspended for, you know, more than a week and a half, you know, is that a role that... They have guys where you say, okay, you know, they have depth in their farm system. Their farm system is still, it's not as deep as it was. And then we're not even talking about, they've got one of the best pitching prospects in the minors in Forrest Whitley as well, who is not that far away. This is also a team that their peak came a little bit earlier. Like if this team had fallen just a little short this year, you'd say, oh, that's okay, because really 2018, 2019 could be their peak. Those peaks come earlier than we think. That's one of the things when I was looking back at these wave teams of prospects. But at the same time, you do look at these teams and you're like, no, this is not a team that we're going to turn around to next year and say, man, it's good they had that run because they had to dismantle it soon thereafter.
Yeah, no, no one should be surprised. The Astros and Dodgers are back. I mean, if you were to look at the last four World Series contenders, Cubs, Dodgers, Astros, Indians. If you were to tell me those are the four teams in the ALCS and NLCS, you know, playing each other next year, no surprise. I mean, I think all those teams are built to last. We've seen the Yankees come up with this really good wave of young talent. We have also seen that sometimes everything lines up great and then things happen, tragedies happen, life gets away. So I think it's important to really treasure this. And even if the Astros,
if this is it,
you know what? Won that World Series, that flag flies forever. You know, it's interesting. The Dodgers, it was kind of funny watching it last night. There were, you know, I made the point that, hey, look, baseball, sports, they are entertainment. It's important to remember that. The Dodgers put together one of the most entertaining, thrilling seasons that the city of Los Angeles has seen baseball-wise. And by the Angels are in Anaheim, they're not in Los Angeles, so let's get that straight. That the real city of Los Angeles has seen for... Again, 30 years. They overcame all those, you know, NLDS, NLCS postseason demons. They got to the World Series for the first time in 29 years, in the lifetime of a significant number of young fans who have been loving this team for years now. There is not, it hurts, it stings. There's no question about it. But this was an incredible season that I think Los Angelinos should look back on and smile. It was interesting. I made that point and I got about, I don't know, a bunch of people seemed to agree with it. And then there were the two or three, you know, F you, you know, this is a participatory. Now you just got.
I got trophy.
Wow. Okay. You know, trophy. And this is a, you know, a lot of people that were angry about saying, you know, this is a failure. No, it's not. A failure is you're supposed to be good. You go out and you win 73 games. A failure is you win 104 and you get swept out of the NLDS. They took it to 7 games. This was a tremendous season with a lot of amazing memories and moments. And again, the Dodgers, this should not be it. This was the peak. Everyone's a free agent after this. They're going to have more chances, but you are going to have that National League pennant flag you should and could look back fondly on. And there's nothing you can look at with the Dodgers outside of saying, yeah, this stings right now, and some of our guys did not perform when we needed them to in Game 7. But overall, big picture, this is an amazing, successful season that, you know, everyone should be proud of that roots for the Dodgers.
The other thing that does stand out is that it is more in the 21st century, especially the 20 teens, with the game getting, the stars getting younger and younger. It is one of the things that, and again, there are downsides to it. It is, tanking does help because they changed the rules a little bit to make it a little less advantageous to have the number one pick and the advantage you get from that. But that being said, it is notable that year after year we are seeing teams. We saw the Astros now that basically they won. And again, as you said, it's only 6 players that are homegrown. But in many ways, this was a homegrown because the lineup was homegrown.
Bregman, Springer, Altuve, Correa, the core guys, the top 4 your lineup.
And then you've pieced around that. And you traded 2 really good pitching prospects, and you brought back your catcher, Brian McCann. You know, you talk about you added complementary pieces in the outfield.
You signed Yuli Gurriel. You signed Josh Reddick. So both to deals, you know, it was $100 million spent on those guys, $47.5 million to Gurriel, and I think it was $52 million to Reddick. So $99.5 million. I think when I looked at as I trashed one of the leads to my stories when I was out there in Houston, one of them was the lineup was 4 homegrown guys, followed by 2 free agent signings, followed by 3 trade acquisitions. It was essentially how they built it.
But so said they. I do believe built largely through development. The Cubs obviously did. Their lineup is very much built around that. The Royals did before them. So you are talking about basically.
I think it might have been 7 home because those 4 guys: Keuchel, McCullers, and going back, Musgrove.
Right, Musgrove.
And those guys, and then you have Fisher. So it might have been 8. Whereas it was 6 to 8. I think it might have been 6 in the ALCS roster. But the point is, you're still talking about a team that roughly was, you know, less than a third of their team was homegrown, unless you wanted to count Gurriel as a free agent signing.
Right. And then,
that's the overall point. We're getting back to, it's not like this was the entire pitching staff, the entire lineup.
Right. I mean, this is what I'm saying. The point being is that it really is a case nowadays where you don't buy. I mean, again, because the other teams have gotten there. The Dodgers, the Mets, the Indians. The last world, what it comes down to is that it is really hard nowadays with how free agency works. You add pieces to your team through free agency. And again, I'm not saying that there's not advantage to being able to have the financial wherewithal if you're the Dodgers to spend. The Dodgers wrote off mistake after mistake.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right. And I'm not excusing that doesn't give them advantage over teams. But the reality of it is that the cores of these teams comes down to it's very few of the moves that have made that have gotten teams to the World Series in recent years have been the Angels announced that they signed Albert Pujols to free agent Albert Pujols to a 10-year deal.
Right. It's that perfect mix of, hey, we need that strong group of homegrown talent that can come up and consistently supplement and eventually, hopefully, if everything works out the way you hope it does, becomes those homegrown franchise superstars. You add in some pieces through trades, you add in some pieces through free agent signings. It all comes together. I think anytime you're relying on only one avenue to procure talent, you're shortchanging yourself. And I think both the Astros and Dodgers have done a nice job of procuring talent through all their available avenues. Internationally, free agent signings, amateur draft. They really have taken advantage of them all. And then again, once they've gotten them in the system, properly identified, okay, here's who we need to keep. Here's the guys we need to keep, but have to develop X skill or Y trait. again, just this doesn't happen by accident. This was a really, really well put together team on both sides. And the Astros, when they put them on the field, they played better in Game 7. Simple as that.
You know, we will be now. It's the World Series is over. So what we'll be diving into on the podcast going forward is prospect season. So we have a backlog to catch up to. We like to do a podcast focusing on each and every org. We have already rolled out, if you go to baseballamerica.com, we have rolled out the top 10s for all NL East teams already. So we are 1/6 of the way done in the prospect season rankings of the top 10s already. We actually are just finishing up writing the NL Central top 10s. Those will be in the magazine that we're sending out to the publisher today, to the printer today. And so we do want to remind you with that our top 10 coverage is brought to you by Bowman. With an online subscription to Baseball America, you'll receive insider info and have exclusive access to our top 10s, draft news, and top 100 rankings for anyone else. Visit our online store and click on subscriptions for more details. So you get all that if you subscribe to Baseball America. Online subs are as cheap as $5.50 a month, and you will get, right now you're sitting there with, you know, when you say scouting reports, it literally thousands if you talk about all that we have there. But right now we've rolled out already the top 10s for 5 teams in the NL East. We'll be rolling on to the Central, then to the West. We'll get to the Dodgers before too long. But our next podcast we'll be coming back with, we will probably start it off with the Braves coming up, which will be a fun one because talking about teams, I know that there's a lot going on right there that is not good because there's obviously an investigation going on, and we don't even know the full after effects. It may be, it's very possible that the top 10 in the prospect, the top 30 in the prospect handbook will be missing a couple of guys that we wrote about because we don't know what the penalties will be for the violations that it appears that the Braves did do in their violation of baseball rules. That said, one of the deepest, best farm systems in baseball, and one that's going to be very interesting to see. They're a team that has kind of gone through that rebuilding process, and they've done it a little differently. They have hitters. Ronald Acuna, Austin Riley is a good top of that, but there's a lot more pitching there than there have been in the Astros rebuild or the Cubs rebuild or even the Royals rebuild. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. But we'll be back for that on our next podcast. For Kyle, I'm JJ. We thank you for tuning in today. Don't forget to pre-order your 2018 Prospect Handbook and Almanac for the upcoming season. Visit baseballamerica.com and click on store to order. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.